the date, April 7th, 1989, and we're watching The Dream Team. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and while Colin is off being a singing and dance man on stage somewhere else, we've got our official substitute co-host, the Henry Sikorsky to my Billy Cofield.
Hello, I'm Aaron Knowles, and isn't it great to be young and insane?
It sure is, yes. Absolutely. Our March Madness month coming to a close with this classic that you have never even heard of, so I can't wait for this. Looking back at April 1989, when the movies and theaters were Leviathan, ooh. Fletch Lives. I've never had a Fletch movie on this show before, I'm surprised. Ooh. Lean Spine on Me. Troop Beverly Hills, and of course, our movie for today, The Dream Team, which earned $28.9 million on a $15 million budget. I mean, that one doubled it, unlike Fight Club last week. I mean, you know, sure, it made more money, but...
Oddly enough, I've actually, you know, I mean, now that I've watched The Dream Team, I've seen every single one of those movies.
Yeah, Troop Beverly Hills, I mean, Shelley Long classic. I mean, that Absolutely. Makes me want to watch The Money Pit, though, is what that wants to makes yes. me want to watch, yeah.
Yes. Well, there are a lot of sure things in this world, Sean. Daryl Hannah getting a shout out in an 80s film.
It sure is, yep.
Crazy people getting lost in the big city.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode, spoiler alert.
so many assurities in life, you know?
Yeah. Only two things in life that are sure are taxes and death.
Mm-hmm. And spoiler alerts.
And spoiler alerts. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And Daryl Hannah.
Hey, Fletch Lives. Have you seen the remake of Fletch with John Hamm?
No, I didn't even know there was a remake.
It's a lot of fun.
Really?
In Canada, it's on Netflix. I watched it a few weeks ago. But yeah, John Hamm as Fletch.
Interesting. I mean, I didn't even know. Like, I know they, you know, obviously did Get Smart.
Yeah,
you know, which
I
was,
do enjoy
which,
Get Smart, yeah.
Which was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good one. But I didn't know they did a Fletch. I'll have to check that out. I
found Fletch to be, it was a fun remake, and I hope that John Hamm gets another one. Yeah. I think he is good as Fletch.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to look that up.
But back to this week's movie, The Dream Team. I've got four taglines for the poster of this movie. The first one, if... they knew the city was this crazy, they would have stayed in the asylum.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's a tagline off one of the DVDs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Yeah. No. Number two, they're alone and lost in New York, the only place crazier than they are.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it crazier than they are?
Not really.
Yeah. It's funny. I made it to New York in 1999, the one and only time I've been to New York City, and it was only for a day, because it was when I did my road trip to Woodstock 99, but we did take one day in Manhattan, and I mean, I remember thinking, the 80s kind of lied to me. It's not nearly as dingy and scummy and scary as it looks. And I know that was 20 years ago. I know it's gentrified even more since then.
Yeah. There's not hookers and crack and rats everywhere.
Nowhere at all, right? Yeah. Well, number three, here we go. This is the long one. This morning, they were playing ping pong in the hospital rec room. Now they're lost in New York and framed for murder. This was never covered in group therapy.
It's a bit wordy.
Mm-hmm. It was. Yeah. I mean, it's... I want to throw that tagline on Home Alone 2 Lost in New York.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
This morning, Kevin was playing ping pong in the hospital rec room.
All of these are reminiscent of Home Alone 2.
Yeah.
It's basically the...
the adult version of Home Alone 2 Lost in New York. Yeah.
The prequel.
Well, Number four, finally, four guys on a field trip to reality.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not too bad. I mean, the third one says a lot, I guess, but it doesn't give us the full picture. So let's go to Colin. Holy shit. That one wasn't even like a stop. Holy God. I need to, like, you know, have a swear jar for every time I do that and then send you the my damages. Well, it doesn't tell us everything, so let's go to Aaron and get a 60-second synopsis. Jesus Christ. Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. Aaron, I love you, man, but I'm sorry that I just...
On my birthday?
On your birthday. I'm sorry that I can't stick it in my head. I can't break that muscle memory.
It's okay. All of us black people look the same.
Oh, that's exactly what it is. I didn't want to say it, but I'm glad someone highlighted.
Anyways, back to the Dream Team after I kill Sean with humor.
Let's
see if I can do
closet,
this one.
Closet racist.
Yeah. Not even basement racist.
Yeah, basement racist.
Get him back in the basement. I don't know how many times in the 80s the idea of losing a character or characters in the city of New York was tossed around, but if I have to watch one more movie, I'm going to lose my goddamn... Wait a second, is that Michael Keaton? Okay, one more won't hurt. When another out-of-the-box thinking doctor has the great idea to take mental patients into the big city because it will help them heal, what else can occur besides mayhem? Four loose mental patients trying to find their way in the world and their comatose doctor wander around the city of New York trying to figure out how to get back home to Jello Night. The funniest thing about this movie is that the cops are about as useful as they are in real life. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But in all seriousness, what is it with murderous cops in these 80s films, okay? Every single cop is dirty and wants to murder you, and they think they can get away with it. Anyways, let's wrap this up. Save the doctor and get back to the loony bin. Come on, Doc. You had one job. A fucking field trip.
Nice. Oh, right on. That was a good one. I like that one. That was, and what is it with bad guys in 80s films? Or bad, you know, dirty cops in 80s films?
The 80s were just rife with dirty cops and
so
bad
so
doctors and dirty cops.
Bad doctors, dirty cops, yeah, all over the place. Yeah. Well, the Dream Team, I mean, I obviously brought this one forward because I know you haven't even heard of it. But, yeah, at this point in my life, back in 1989, 1990, that kind of thing. I was actually already fairly well-versed in Michael Keaton movies because I had seen Beetlejuice, Gung-Ho, Mr. Mom. Like, so I had already known his filmography a bit before this movie came out. And then, like, a couple of months after this movie comes out, there was, like, this independent movie that he was in that stuck with me. I don't remember what it was called. It had something to do with bats, though. That's all I remember. Bats and clowns. I think it was directed by Tim Burton. Anyway, I can't remember
Never
what
it
was. It. Yeah, but after seeing that movie, I wanted to seek out other Michael Keaton things. And, like, the very next year after that bat movie, there was this thriller that came out called Pacific Heights. And I remember getting excited when I saw that on DVD, so I checked that out. Or not DVD back then, fuck, 1990, no, we're talking VHS.
Laserdisc.
Laserdisc. But I also discovered the Dream Team at that time. And it was one of these things that I was excited to see because, you know, I also like Christopher Lloyd because, come on, Doc Brown. And I mean, really, he was in a Back to the Future movie this year in 1989, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I knew Christopher Lloyd. And so for me, it was a good lineup. So I enjoyed this movie when it first came out. And but that's what brought me to it is I seeked it out because at the time I was looking for more Michael Keaton. So. Yeah. So, yeah, for you, you had never even heard of this movie, though, hey?
Yeah, so I was trying to figure out, yeah, 89 was the Dream Team, Back to the Future Part 2, but where in this lineup? Okay, so 5 years earlier was The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. That's what I wanted to look up, was I wanted to look up. So Buckaroo Banzai came out a year before the first Back to the Future. Just, I don't know why I felt like that was important for Christopher Lloyd's character development, but that's what I had to bring up.
Well, Judge Dredd was before this, because Judge Dredd would have been 88. Or not Judge Dredd. Well, Judge Doom. Judge Doom in Roger Rabbit.
Yes, Roger Rabbit. Jesus Christ. I think I blocked.
I am the law. Can you imagine Christopher Lloyd is.
I am the law. Now, that movie, I think I blocked that movie from my memory because it was so traumatizing. But the Dream Team, never really had heard of it, never really had seen anything about it. But when you brought this movie up, I'm just like, this is a hell of a cast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then also plot-wise, like reading the synopsis, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. So, it was definitely one that I was, when you brought it up, I was definitely excited to see it and actually experience it. So, it's weird how this one kind of like flew under my radar.
Very much so. Yeah. Well, let's jump into the Dream Team here.
Yeah.
Directed by Howard Zeef, who is the director of My Girl 1 and 2 and Private Benjamin. Those are kind of his other claims to fame. Produced by Christopher W. Knight, whose only credits... I fell into a bit of a rabbit hole here.
Oh.
His only credits are this motocross movie called Winners Take All and this movie called Hot Dog the Movie. Now, I don't know if I can get you on board to do a bonus episode for our Patreon and watch Hot Dog the Movie, but this looks like a terrible 1980s ski school type movie where they're hot dogging on the slopes, buddy. I've never heard of Hot Dog the Movie. So for this movie to be written by the guy that did Hot Dog the Movie, or produced by, the guy that did Hot Dog the Movie, I don't know. It's so weird. This guy, he produced three things and then said, no, I'm not, producing's not for me, I guess.
This is rated R?
I watched the trailer. I watched the trailer. I heard them say, you're hot dogging on the slopes. That was an actual quote from the trailer. I don't know. I'm just saying that if we ever did a bonus episode or something, or did a month of, I've never even heard of this one, even though I've already brought you one of those tonight.
Oh,
well,
interesting.
And it's written by David Luca, who is the writer on things like Rings, Dream House, House at the End of the Street, a dark, Jesus, creepy vibe. That's kind of his wheelhouse. And John Connolly, who wrote Eddie, which is, the Whoopi Goldberg basketball movie. Here we are, March Madness. Let's at least drop a basketball title.
Yeah.
But, and a movie called Working Trash. And then this is the other rabbit hole I fell into. This David Luca, or this John Connolly, wrote Working Trash. And it's a movie starring Ben Stiller and George Carlin from 1990.
What the fuck is happening?
Right?
What is...
About a couple of janitors that find something and, hijinks ensues, right? It sounds kind of like the Men at Work, that Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez movie about the garbage man. Yeah. Except in this case, I don't think it's a dead body they find in the garbage. So, I'm like, what the
Wild.
Fuck? What is going on?
Wild.
And all because of this weird, movie that I, for some reason, has stuck with me all these years. And, other people like you have never even heard of.
Man. You need to have a month of rabbit holes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Rabbit hole month.
Is that May for Easter?
For Easter. Well, anyway, so we open the movie. We've got over the credits, we hear someone singing, not super well, playing an accordion, playing Dream a Little Dream of Me. And then we kind of open up and we're in a mental institution. We're in the Shady Acres or whatever it's called. I don't even know if I wrote down what it's actually called.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I was looking for that when they were driving in and out of the actual like location. And I couldn't see a sign. It was just kind of like a road.
It's going to be shady something.
Yeah.
Right. It's yeah. always Shady something. Like Shady Acres. Pines was from Golden yeah. Girls. I think Shady Acres was Happy Gilmore. Like, you know, it's but anyway, so we see our first guy, Henry. And I mean, we might as well talk about this cast, but I just want to ask before we get into the cast, were you fooled by the fact that he was not actually a doctor?
Like, not at all.
Not at all?
I saw it coming. Even though, like, for a second, I did question it. I was like, oh, he's not a doctor. He's a patient. Because, like, well, okay, first off, when he's walking down the hallway, we first see Christopher Lloyd as Henry Sikorsky, like, fix something on a nurse's uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And she just kind of smiles at him, like, endearingly. And so that was, like, my first kind of clue, like, no, he's not a doctor. He's a patient.
Oh, okay.
But I thought it was a good kind of, like, red herring to put right there in front of the
Yeah, a little misdirect right off the top. Yeah.
So I thought it was well done. And also the Dream a Little Dream, like, song, that lead-in was really good.
It was, yeah.
Because appreciated that.
It started off in, like, it was echoey and distant. And the way that they pulled it in as the credits went on, right? Like, I really like just even the sound mapping of that scene of how they bring you into the song. Yeah.
All right. Well, so let's like you said, let's get into the cast. We have a phenomenal cast here. We have, you know, leading is Michael Keaton. You know, we all know what he's been in. Batman.
That's what it was called. Yeah, shit, thank you. Right.
I didn't want to spoil it for you, but you know, Beetlejuice,
which we've had on this show, Batman Returns, which we've had on this show, Mr. Mom, which we've had on this show. Like, yeah, we've done a few Michael Keatons, that's for sure.
RoboCop. You know, he was in the remake of RoboCop.
Oh, the remake, right? Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Herbie Fully Loaded. I mean, Jackie Brown,
Birdman.
He actually voiced Porco Rosso in the English version of Studio Ghibli's aptly named Porco Rosso animated film, which is one of my favorites. Obviously, you know, Batman Returns, Pacific Heights, like you mentioned. Believe it or not, his first acting role. Do you know what it was?
That's not Night Shift, is it? No.
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He played a black and white panda.
Huh.
For 3 episodes. That was back in 1974.
Recurring role. Holy shit. Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and you know, he was in Morbius, he was in The Flash. One thing that I watched recently with him, this is actually, I mean, well, it's 2 years ago, or actually almost 3 years ago now, Dope Sick. I think, I want to say it was a FX, or was it Hulu? It might have been a Hulu series, TV miniseries, on the opioid crisis and the opioid pandemic. Amazing movie. If you've never seen Dope Sick, miniseries. That was a really good one.
Yeah, I mean, just Michael Keaton is just, I mean, I mentioned Pacific Heights as well as one of those that I was drawn to after Batman. He's got such a wide range of things that he's done over the years. I mean, Gung Ho, which was another one that one of those random 80s movies where he's like works in a car factory and has to go over to Japan to learn, you know, Japanese efficiency, or, you know, like, I just, all these things of Michael Keaton's, he was in a lot of movies of my childhood.
It's odd because he does have good range, but at the same time, he still is very much like always Michael Keaton.
It's always Michael
like
Keaton,
he's
yeah.
so he's just, I guess the only way I can describe it is he's so Michael Keaton, it's hard to avoid him being Michael Keaton, because Michael Keaton is an enigma in himself, and he's, like, very good at it. Because I loved, like, watching him in this role, he had that same, that's what he brought out when he did his, you know, Batman was before this, wasn't it?
Batman was, like, 3 months after this.
Yeah, so I think maybe he used this role to bring out that crazy scene where he's like, you want to get nuts?
Yeah, let's get nuts. That could be
Let's get nuts.
Right there.
Yeah. So like I enjoy seeing Michael Keaton on screen. He's got such a presence. But let's not fawn too much over one person. Christopher Lloyd is in this. You know, Christopher Lloyd has been in a ton of shit also.
Yeah. Also in Mr. Mom, we've seen him on this show. He was in that with Michael Keaton. But we've seen him here with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and there was at least one other thing that we had him on here for. Clue. Him in Clue. Yeah, I mean, Christopher Lloyd is someone unlike Michael Keaton. You know, Michael Keaton, you say you kind of go to him if you want that Michael Keaton energy, and it's always going to be somewhat the same. As fantastic as he is in the different roles, you can see all the glimpses. Whereas Christopher Lloyd is one of these that every time I see him, he just melts into that role much better, right?
Yes.
You know, like, if you hire Christopher Walken, you're always just going to get Christopher Walken. But if you hire Christopher Lloyd, you have everything from Judge Doom to Doc Brown to, you know, and then you get something like this, which is a pretty subdued performance. And also not the first time he's been in a mental institution, because, you know, in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, he's also in that one.
Very much so. He can be very somber. He can be very relaxed. He can also be very high energy and kinetic. Like, you know, he is a very talented actor. He's very well trained. Yeah. Next up is Peter Boyle. Peter Boyle, we've seen in quite a few things. Everybody Loves Raymond.
Young Frankenstein.
Young Super Duper. Santa Claus 2. Doesn't he play the Tooth Fairy? No, Father Time. Father Time. That's
he's Father Time, but he also in the first Santa Claus, he was the boss.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yes, he was.
He was Scott's boss at the toy place. Yeah. And we recently watched that on this show as well. That's why he's kind of in my head for that one.
Species 2, Dr. Doolittle, The Shadow. He was in The Shadow, which I love. It's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. And I have an observation once we get to Sponsorship Corner as well. Oh. So, yeah. Yeah, when it comes to his filmography.
Yeah. He was in Superman.
Shit, he was. See.
Man. Yeah. I'll leave it at that. But he's got a good record. Yeah. Stephen First, so Peter Boyle played Jack McDermott, who is the crazy guy who thinks that he's Jesus.
Yeah, he's the reincarnate of Jesus. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then Stephen First thinks, well, he doesn't really think anything. He just doesn't really speak. He speaks in everything that in phrases and dialogue from sports and news shows.
Yeah, he's Bumblebee.
Yes. Good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what he is. He's Bumblebee. Nice. Yeah.
He passed away. National Lampoon's Animal House.
Oh, you know, right. Yes. I forgot about that already.
You know, back in 1978, passed away in 2017 at the age of 63. I was looking at his IMDb and I was like, I haven't really seen anything since. He hasn't done anything since 2016, but he's done a lot of voice work, which is really cool. One of his most prominent voice roles was actually the Buzz Lightyear, the animated series.
Okay. Who was he? Was he Buzz?
He was Booster.
Booster.
I think he was the pet. Booster and Blister, I guess, are two of them. Yeah. Oh, he did a voice in Freakazoid. So a lot of voice acting. Mm-hmm. Chips, he did, you know, some what do you call it, character acting. And then, so go back to Dennis Boutsakaris, Dr. Weitzman.
Yeah, who I said last, at the end of last episode, was one of those links to some of the movies of my childhood. And Batteries Not Included was when we saw him on this show.
Yes. Yes. I like watching him. He is a face that you know that you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's like buried deep. And yeah, you gotta find it.
For some reason, why do I always want to put this guy next to Paul Reiser? For some reason in my head, I see somewhere where he and Paul Reiser are together. I think Paul Reiser was in Batteries Not Included, come to think of it. But I feel like were they the two stars of My Two Dads or something? Like...
I'm trying to see Paul. Let's see.
Well, yeah, because Paul Reiser is My Two Dads, so that's why I'm wondering who the other guy was in that. Because I think he looks like this guy might be what it was.
I don't see Touch Mine Angel, The X-Files, Bull, Nash Bridges, CSI, Law and Order, House. No, I don't see you said My Two Dads?
Yeah, My Two Dads, which was starring Paul Reiser and Greg Evigan. Okay.
Oh, Crocodile Dundee 2. Interesting.
Yeah, My Two Dads.
Ah, yeah.
But see, it was a guy with a beard, so that's why. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, all black people look the same, and all guys with beards look the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
So bearded, not only racist, men.
But you're beardist.
Okay, yeah, got I it. Am. Yeah. all sorts of deep dark secrets coming out in this.
All
episode.
Sorts of ists. Yeah. And then the one. So, okay, she stood out to me. So I mean, I know Lorraine Bracco. She's been in a ton of shit.
But she's so unrecognizable in this, isn't
yes,
she?
Yes. So she plays Riley. She plays, I guess, Michael Keaton or Billy Caulfield's. Love interest.
Yeah.
I have never seen her younger.
No.
Never seen her younger than this. Everything else that I've seen her in, she looks absolutely the same. From mm-hmm. her role in Rizzoli and Isles to, I looked her up already, and she's been, you know, she's been in quite a few things.
Well, isn't she Mrs. Soprano? No. No, that's not right.
She was I think she was the therapist in The Sopranos.
Oh, okay. Right, she was in The Sopranos. Though. Yes, that okay.
She was also the CEO of the company in Hackers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she was in Goodfellas. She was Karen yep. Hill. Yeah, I mean that's probably one of those roles that if I really know her from, it's Karen Hill.
Yeah.
Right. When she had the curly, you know, like the Farrah Fawcett type hair, right? Like, isn't that what she had going on in Goodfellas? Maybe it's been too long since I've seen it.
But yeah, she Karen Hill, Sea of Love, Sing, Someone Watch Over Me, The Pickup Artist, Crying Story. So yeah, I mean, hard not to recognize her almost instantaneously. She's a very unique looking woman, and I don't know, just the short hair threw me off on this one.
It really did. Yeah,
yeah. And then yeah. I don't know if there's anybody else that I really recognized in this movie other than those.
Well,
anybody else you want to shout out?
I like giving a shout out to James Remar, who was one of the dirty cops. He was Gianelli.
Yes.
James Remar, I was a big fan of Dexter. And so, of course, he's Dexter's dad.
Yes.
So that's why I like giving him. And I believe he was also in Buckaroo Banzai, if I remember correctly. You just brought that up. He was in one of those type of movies that we have watched very recently. James Remar has shown up again, and it might have been Buckaroo Banzai.
I'm going down the rabbit hole. I will find it.
Or,
1984?
Or was it like Double Dragon? Might have even been one of those... that's why I want to say Buckaroo Banzai. It wasn't Killer Clowns. No.
Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. Tales from the Crypt.
See. Okay, I swear this man was...
Fatal Instinct.
Just in something off
Renaissance Man. That was a good movie. Miracle on 34th Street. He was in Judge Dredd.
Yeah. Well, in Sex and the City.
He was the... Yeah. He's like, yeah, come get me, lawman.
Yeah, we haven't done Judge Dredd, though.
The Phantom. He was in The Phantom.
Yeah, we haven't done that either. We've only talked about that a lot.
Psycho, Walker, Texas Ranger, Hellraiser, Inferno, Seventh Heaven, The Huntress, X-Files, Twilight Zone. He's done a shit ton of stuff.
He has done a lot, yeah.
Too Fast, Too Furious.
He's in The Girl Next Door.
Blade Trinity, Battlestar Galactica, The Warriors, the video game, of course.
Yeah. Oh, Mortal Kombat Annihilation. That's where we saw him as Raiden in Mortal
yes,
Kombat
that's
Annihilation.
That's right. He was also in Pineapple Express. Illegal!
Yep, yeah. I just need to go a little bit
Red.
Earlier just to see here,
yep.
though.
He was Red. X-Men First Class. Yeah, the U.S. General.
Yeah,
Transformers.
No,
he used Sideswipe's voice. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was 100% Mortal Kombat is
yeah.
what we have talked about him recently for on this show. Yeah, yeah.
This guy though, I'm actually kind of surprised. He's done a lot of
right?
a lot of roles, a lot of voice acting. This guy's been busy.
It's fat, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, that's all I've got. I mean, we might as well shout out his partner, too. Philip Bosco is O'Malley. But, I mean, yeah, other than that, everyone else that's kind of listed, yeah, there's the Ed and all that sort of stuff. But, no, it really is those core, like, five or six that are just really the big part of this movie. So, yeah, we open up this movie, and we've got Henry walking around to all the different people that we're going to see, telling him that it's time for group. I like Kenny in the ping pong scene.
That was good. The one thing I wanted to kind of like talk about kind of early on was you said that this movie wasn't as like when you kind of warned me about this movie, you said it wasn't as endearing to the mentally unwell as some of the other movies.
That my biggest example of that is the way that all the doctors talk about the patients. Mm-hmm. Right? Like with crazy people, it never got to the point where they were using a lot of terms and throwing them around. But like even in this movie too, Michael Keaton's character is throwing around a lot of freaks and psychos and schizos, and you know, like there's just a lot of weaponized language in this movie, mm-hmm. that I think it's just it doesn't play as sensitively as Crazy People. I think we gave props to Crazy People. I just need to call out a little bit more of the harsher language that was used in this one to describe the individuals, but most of it was still handled delicately. But
yes,
I didn't see any, you know, approval from the Mental Health Society of America in this one.
True.
Yeah.
I would say also that, you know, the thing to think about with that is when you look at the characters here, you have, they're a little bit more fleshed out and unique in their own kind of like way than crazy people kind of was.
Crazy People, yeah, we kind of established a lot of generalized anxiety was kind of the best diagnosis we could do.
Yes, whereas these, you know, obviously, and I would say with like Michael Keaton being mostly the kind of the perpetrator when it comes to a lot of this weaponized dialogue, it's because he obviously has an anger issue, you know, some frustration and some self-control issues. Mm-hmm. So I would say like with him, it's kind of, I know for me, it wasn't necessarily as bad as I thought it was going to be, only because when I look at Michael Keaton, I kind of feel sorry for him because I understand the idea that he has some of those issues. You know, he uses his words, and he sometimes, if when his words don't work, he uses his actions to inflict. I mean, and that's the thing, he doesn't hurt anybody.
No, and ultimately we see growth that he does come. He does embrace these people as a kind of found family in a way.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't want to hurt anybody. He just wants to kind of be seen and acknowledged for the fact that he is, you know, I think that's what he's trying to avoid. He's trying to avoid being generalized. He's trying to avoid being kind of lumped in with the crowd. He's doing things that kind of set him apart and define him as this, like, out of the, you know, like, outside of the norm character or, you know, person in this group. And that's why he's like, he kicks over planters, he throws chairs, you know, because if he really wanted to, he would hurt other people.
But and the fact that he wants to get noticed also plays into the fact that he's such a storyteller and such a dreamer and such a, you know, he's all into these tall tales, always stretching some form of the truth. And so he likes attention. He seeks it. And that's what he gets off on.
Yeah, and I think that that's, at the end of the day, I think that I understand, like, I'll get into the rest of the movie and kind of, like, my feelings on it as we go through it, but one thing that kind of came out of this that I'm kind of realizing now is I liked how, when we watch Crazy People was kind of like this group of characters in this institution got together and kind of found their purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the Dream Team, you have this group of people that are kind of forced together in this event, not just in this particular group, but like in this event that's occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And they are each individually kind of put into a situation where they kind of have to face these things that have put pressure on them and kind of put them where they are.
That have always held them back.
Always held them back. So you got like, you know, Christopher Lloyd's character, you know, Henry Sikorsky, he goes and he sees his family because he hasn't talked to his wife in years. And I think that that's, you know, well, I guess we'll just go over like kind of each of the characters. Like Henry Sikorsky hasn't talked to his wife in years. During the movie, he goes and part of his growth is he goes and he visits his wife and his daughter, who he hasn't talked to or seen really in like 2 years. And it very much is fitting with his character because he tries to control everything. He tries to keep everything neat and orderly and kind of, what's the word? Not necessarily transparent, but like if things are neat and order in place, you don't have to worry about things creeping out and scaring you. The world makes sense. And you can see how that plays into why he's there, because he was obviously going through some things and he didn't want to talk to his family because his world was messy before.
Yeah, the test of throwing the crumpled piece of paper, I mean, like, absolutely brilliant. I love it. You know, no, that's not your problem. Leave it.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't think about it. Just leave it.
And I think that they ended up realizing that he worked in sanitation before, and so that's why he was so all about cleanliness. Again, I just thought it was really interesting for that character, as well as, I'm forgetting his name, Boyle. Yeah,
Peter Boyle. Jack? Yeah.
Yeah, being, you know, funny enough about crazy people is you know, Peter or Jack McDermott, he's an advertising guy, I think, also.
Yeah,
and kind of loses, you know, he loses his mind.
Yeah, he tried to throw a colleague out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I find it, you know, again, and then he has to go back and he realizes that, you know, he goes back to his office. He had a lot of pressure on his shoulders when he was doing the job, but he realized that he was the best person in that office. He realized that he was as good as he believed, and he doesn't have to live up to this idea of him, you know, being the son of God or like putting himself in a different role because he was amazing at what he did. So, you know, and it's like, I think even looking at Michael Keaton's character, which I find interesting because his chosen girlfriend is an actress. And she is by choice.
So she pretends for a living.
By choice, she pretends for a living. And he finds like belonging with her because of that. I think he finds kind of a common ground where she may not be crazy, but she at least understands his world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then you have, you know, Stephen first, Albert, and I don't really know why. Did they explain? I think I must have missed it if they explained why he was the way he was.
No, he's the one that's been in there for 12 years, though.
Yeah.
When they leave for their field trip, the doctors say, you know, some of them haven't even been out of here for 12 years. And he's the 12-year guy because Peter Boyle, I mean, people at the job still know who he is. So he's probably only been in there a few years. Michael Keaton's Billy's only been in there a year and a half, and Henry has only been in there about 2 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's the one that has been in there the longest, and I don't think they quite explain why he is the way that he is. Like he's just the quirky one.
He's just scared. He's scared of the world.
Yeah.
And the TV. That's probably why he likes. And he speaks like the television because he likes the world through the television. That is his window.
Yeah, I think in one of Billy's breakdowns, he even points out that, you know, you're too scared to have your own opinion, which is why he speaks through other people's opinions.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah, a bunch of fun characters. And he ends up, eventually, he'll at least talk to Billy still. That's going to suck the next day when Billy gets released from this institution and now Albert won't talk to anyone again. Yeah, I did write it down. It's the Cedarbrook Psychiatric Hospital in Trenton, New Jersey. Yeah. So there we go. Cedarbrook. So, no, it
wasn't. I'll have to go check that place out.
It wasn't shady. It could still be shady Cedarbrook. I mean, it should be, but...
Cedarbrook sponsored by Shady Pines.
Yeah. I guess the shady ones that I was talking about are actually more like nursing homes, not mental institutions. So
got it.
So I was on the wrong wavelength there. Yeah.
It makes sense. So Dr. Weitzman, the psychologist, gets them all in the room and, you know, is obviously trying to get them to gets them all to discuss their issues during group. I'm going to try very hard to stay on task with this movie because I did feel a lot of the time that this movie was just kind of like pointless and dragging on.
Okay. Well, I know I was distracted by what is Billy's tattoo. Were you able to figure that out the entire movie? Okay.
No.
Because, I mean, at some points it looks like a fish. At some points it looks like a bottle pouring like something out.
I was trying to figure out, it seemed like it was placed. Is that really his tattoo?
I don't think Michael Keaton actually has that tattoo, but you never know. If he doesn't have his own tattoo, it was a very deliberate choice, and to never show any focus on it is also an unusual choice then.
Yes.
I don't know. But yeah, we do find out that this group has all been recently taken off medication. Like, they are all part of a program that is trying to prepare them for release. And Dr. Weitzman, of course, gets the idea, well, how are they going to know what the real world's like if they've just been stuck in here all this time?
Mm-hmm.
We need to see how no medication works in the real world.
I feel like they're like killer whales and we have to reintroduce them into the wild.
Something like that. Yeah, that's sort of what it is, you know. I guess it's the halfway house of like mental health or something, you know. Like,
yeah.
It's mental health probation is what they're looking at here, yeah.
We're overcrowded. Get them out.
Yeah. But yeah, so they want to go to the big city. They want to see a Yankees game.
Oh, yeah.
I was surprised that there was never any Yankees logo shown.
Yeah, true.
But there were a few other logos. So I think I'll talk about them in Sponsorship Corner. Always on the lookout for product placements and movies, this week the Dream Team is brought to you by Mercedes, Buick, Jeep, and Chrysler Vehicles, Michelin Tires, Castrol GTX, Champion Spark Plugs, Michelob, Coors Light, Busch and Budweiser Beers, Sona Hi-Fi, RCA and Pioneer Electronics, Whirlpool Appliances, that's the refrigerator box that they walk through Times Square with.
The cat bus.
Yeah. Nike Shoes, Japan Camera, the board game Sorry, the movies Bull Durham and Red Heat, which Peter Boyle is in as the police captain. Red Heat starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Belushi.
Yeah.
And Soprani Accordions, plus the possibly fictional Napolitano Disposal Incorporated, whose phone number is Klondike 57530, Emilio's Restaurant, Chicken to Go, and Owitz Bar. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, I enjoyed the I saw a Klondike 5 because I don't know why it came up. I don't know whether it was one of your episodes or one of Colin's episodes, but I'm like, Klondike 5, that used to be a thing, right? Klondike 5. And I'm like, I saw it. KL5. I still don't, because KL5 would still be 555. So I don't understand why Klondike 5 is the thing.
Interesting.
Who knows? Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't understand that part of history. I just know it's a thing that...
I know things. I don't know what those things mean, but I know things.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
So speaking of walking through Times Square in a box as a Chinese New Year dragon or what some might call a cat bus.
Yeah.
So Dr. Weitzman gets the bright idea that he wants to, like we were talking about, reintroduce these guys into society, and a trip to the ballpark to catch a game and eat a hot dog is the perfect experience.
Oh my god! And how amazing is 1989 money? $10 for like hot dog and a soda and oh my god! We still have $42 left. That's enough to get 4 tickets in the outfield and 4 dogs. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. How much are those tickets, man?
Jeez.
But yeah, so they take the van, and then I don't know if it's Dr. Weitzman's van, if he owns a big red van. It probably is the hospital's van, but they all jump in the van. So here's the van scene about when they're getting in the van.
The shotgun and the
shotgun
thing. Fight over shotgun.
Again, we have this quad team, this quad dream team of actors.
Mm-hmm.
Who are just so good at what they do. And it's so funny to watch. It's so funny to watch Christopher Lloyd and Peter Boyle, like pretend to be basically like children to get this the shotgun seat of the van. It's just
and then when Peter Boyle gets into the van, you see Billy reach behind himself and they high five over it. Right? Yeah. It's almost like they had this plan to just fuck with Henry.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like they're kids too. And then they almost drive away without their fourth kid.
Yeah.
It's
so well done.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very funny. There was actually one scene that I found absolutely hilarious. And I mean, and I went to the trouble of transcribing it. So Aaron, I think we're going to do a little, I used to like this one piece theater.
Okay.
Now, Aaron, you have never been on our show for an I Used to Like This One Piece Theater. I don't think we ever did one when you were guest starring. I know I've never done one with you, you know, by yourself. I have just emailed you a script, though.
It's like...
Yeah.
Shotgun.
Yeah, I transcribed it because I could not find this whole scene anywhere on the internet. But this is the scene when they go into the Army and Navy. And I found it absolutely hilarious, the exchange between him and Bernie, the clerk behind the desk. So, do you want to be Billy or do you want to be Bernie?
Dealer's choice. Who do you want to be?
Well, I'll take Billy.
Okay.
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 So, here we go. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. This is one of the night... No. This is probably the nicest Army and Navy store I've ever been in, and I've been in every branch of the service, so I know what I'm talking about, all right?
Yeah. Your friends look like they've seen a little action, too.
Okay. You've noticed they're a little different.
I noticed.
You want to know why? It's because we're a special combat unit with the United States Marine Corps, and we've been tracking some Libyan terrorists. In fact, I think we've got them trailed to a bagel shop around the corner. Now, if we can just get some pants on the colonel...
Give me a break.
Okay. We're four escaped lunatics.
This I believe. Now, what do you want?
Look, you probably want us out of here as quickly as possible. Am I right?
I'm prepared to carry you in my arms.
All right. All I'm saying is let's stretch that clothing dollar.
What kind of stretch are we talking about?
$12. Yes! I used to like this one piece theater. I just love that scene. You know, I would carry you out in my arms myself. Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
Can we talk about the fact that they're hunting, like, quote unquote, Libyans, and Libyans were the ones that end up killing Christopher Lloyd as Doc Brown?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That had to have been like an intentional Easter egg, right?
Yeah.
They must have thrown that in for him. Yeah. Yeah, that was just one of those scenes where I'm like, this dialogue is too witty not to highlight it. And what better way than one of our I Used to Like This One Piece theaters?
Again, this just from the beginning of this scene, when they walk in with the box and they're trying to take the box off as a group.
Yeah.
Like, it's just phenomenally done because it's such an awkwardly large box. A, where they fucking find this thing.
Yeah.
And B, to walk into the store and take it off and then just knock over a bunch of displays. Mm-hmm. It's really good.
Yeah. And the scene even opens well because it opens with the second clerk going, yeah, this one's on you, Bernie. Right? Yeah. You know, and then it starts off with, hey, we need some clothes for the son of God over here. And he's like, you know, well, what would the Messiah like then? You know, like it's just even the opening to it. And he wants the tweed jacket. And then the reveal of Peter Boyle in like the high tops, red sneakers and the weird army vest and cargo pants.
It's
a
statement.
Yeah. I know that when I saw him walk into the church, I didn't remember that scene very well. And I'm like, is this going to end up like super racist or anything like that? And it's like, okay, it ends with him stripping down. But yeah. I was worried what was going to happen when he walked into a traditionally black church.
So much anxiety from that scene.
Yeah.
So much. It was palpable. I was so worried because the first thing he says is, brothers.
Yep.
And I'm just like, that
uh-oh.
One word, I was like,
Uh-oh. Yeah. Yeah, I think we're thousands of miles apart, but I think I heard your asshole clench up in that moment. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. shit and diamonds, man. no, it's so again. I guess we should go back to the timeline of this movie.
Yeah,
this
they're in their van. They're singing.
Yeah.
Hit the road, Jack, and then yeah. Albert has to pee. And they get the guy at the gas station. Another very funny scene where the guy's yeah. like, oh, no hablé anglais. And they're like, oh, the Dr. Weitzman tries to speak to him in Spanish. And he goes, hey, I don't speak Spanish either, man.
Right? Can we use your bathroom?
Yeah,
no bathroom.
Use the alley. Yeah. Yeah. So they go down the alley and he witnesses the fakest looking murder ever. I had to laugh at that because of just the way, like, there's no blood in that scene. Once Dr. Weitzman gets hit in the head, it's a bloodier scene than when they actually execute
shoot the guy in the head. Yeah.
But it's like so fake and like there's no flash muzzle. Like it's, you know, yeah, that was the ultimate pretend day on set. Yeah.
Yes. Bang.
Yeah. We have a cap gun for you. That's all we got.
Man, I don't even think they had a cap gun with no caps.
Yeah.
But bust a pretend cap, my friend.
Don't squeeze the trigger, the water will come out. That's what it was. Yeah.
You'll break it, it's plastic. Dr. Weitzman witnesses the murder. He goes running into the alley. The cops chase him down, knock him over, and then they realize
Albert witnesses this.
But they didn't see Albert.
Yeah, they didn't see
Albert. Albert didn't witness the murder, but they witnessed him, the cops, trying to kill the doctor.
Yeah, in that bright red Hawaiian shirt, he just blended into the background of a New York alley. Yeah.
He blends in about as well as Kronk from The Emperor's New Groove.
Absolutely.
So yeah, and then you know they're probably about to finish the job with Dr. Weissman, but neighbors in the alleyway start hearing the commotion and looking down and scare them off before they can finish the job.
Hey, what's going on down there? Yeah.
So the cops run off, and Albert runs back to the van and just leaves Dr. Weissman in the alley.
Well, no, Albert sticks around long enough for the ambulance to show up. He sees Dr. Weitzman go away in the ambulance, and he chases down the ambulance, which is why it's such a big deal when he chases the ambulance down later. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It's once the ambulance goes away, he's like, well, I got nothing else to do. My doctor's out of my reach. I guess I'll go back to the van. But meanwhile, everyone in the van has kind of scattered. The only person sticking around is rule follower Henry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, but I guess it is kind of clever to give someone that has communication problems like Albert the task of knowing. Like, when Billy does compare him to Lassie at one point, it's like, yeah, that is what it's like communicating with Albert.
I wonder if that was, so, between now and, you know, and the 80s, or I guess I should say, you know, the early 90s, because this was basically the ass end of the 80s. There's been a lot of movies where that's been the case. Mm-hmm. You know, you've had a lot of, I guess, who would be the unknowing witness or the non-communicative witness.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was Mercury Rising with Bruce Willis, where the kid was autistic and he witnesses the murder.
Right, yeah.
You got Regarding Henry with Harrison Ford. Like, there's quite a few movies like that kind of take that. And I you're right. I do like that kind of. It's almost like a tangible just clue that's right there in front of the audience for the entire movie. And it's like, Lord, can't you just say something?
Mm-hmm. And it's also, you know, kind of funny because these four characters, when you bring their powers together, it's completely detrimental to them. Like, they're the anti-Avengers. Like, when they get on the phone to, like, try to, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, no, Billy's a compulsive liar. You can't believe him. Oh, yeah, no, this guy can't communicate with anything other than baseball slogans, you know. And then we've got Mr. Control Freak that thinks he's a doctor. Okay, you know, it'll be in my report. And then, you know, oh, yeah, we've got the Mr. Delusional that thinks he's the Christ figure. You know, like, it just, you bring them together and all of a sudden it's just no one believes anybody.
Yeah.
And all their credibility is gone when you combine their powers.
Pretty much, because at one point they do the right thing. They go to the police. Like, their vehicle is impounded. They have no money.
Yeah.
They try and go to the police. They try and do the right thing. They try and go to the police, and the police are just like, get out of here. I don't believe you. Like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah, he's more concerned about, like, kleptomaniac Albert stealing his lunch. the police don't believe him. Like, the only person that believes him is Riley. And we do get the psych out of that scene where we find out that, oh, wait, he does actually know Riley when he goes in, and you think he's just being a noble guy that's standing up for a random waitress.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was definitely an interesting scene, because at the beginning of it, I'm like, I'm wondering, like, why? Because when he's standing outside of this diner, he clearly, like, he either recognizes it, or he's just like, you know what, I'm hungry. And you can believe either one, because he is an impulsive character.
Yeah.
You know, so, and he goes inside, and it's like, you know, he's just there, I think he orders a beer.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Riley's rescue, and like, and then she follows him out, and they start making out. I'm just like, oh, that's a hell of a thank you.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I felt like was missing though in that one scene was when he's got the guy pinned down and slides the check in front of him, and he should have said something like, "And I think 200% tip is fair, right? Yeah. Right? Like there should have
been.
Yeah, I'm Batman. Yeah, you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts." It just felt like that was missing. Was it's like, hey, yeah, and you better make up for grabbing her ass, you know, like let's try to pay her off, because I've beat you up, now we're even, and let's give her a nice tip.
Yeah, exactly.
Let it be a learning moment.
Yes. And then he walks Riley home, and we find out that she's kind of moved on. Mm-hmm. Which is weird, because she literally made out with him.
Yeah, that's a form of dating that I've never done, that I don't understand, where I can.
You're casually allowed to make out with other people while you're in an intimate relationship living with somebody.
Living with someone. Yeah, like that's the thing that kind of takes it over the top is it's like you are sharing a domicile with this person, and oh yeah, your old boyfriend shows up. Let's make out. Yeah. She didn't have to go after him.
No.
No.
She hasn't seen him she hasn't heard from him in 3 months. She hasn't seen him in a year and a half.
Yeah. She just says to like her friend, like, cover my section. I gotta go.
Yeah. 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 Guess I'm done for the day.
I guess so. I wish it was that easy. Why can't all work be like that? But eventually these guys, Henry's gone out to, Albert is the only one left in the van. Henry's gone out picking up garbage, and he commends the guy for doing a great job. Is nighttime garbage pickup a thing in New York City? I know it is in some cities, but.
Yes.
It is? Okay.
Yes.
Because I know we have the garbage trucks that start at like 5 a.m. around here, but we don't have all night garbage.
It is very much a real thing, because I remember the first night that I drove into the city, and it's like probably 11, 12 o'clock at night. And I just think it's partially because of how much activity and foot traffic is going on in the city throughout the day,
mm-hmm.
that they possibly only do it at night.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, and then it does make sense.
Yeah.
But I know it's the case in bigger metropolises. I mean, our greater Edmonton area is a million total, and that's got like three other small towns attached to it. So, yeah, well, but everyone's off doing their own thing. I don't quite understand. It's a bit of a leap of logic to think that Henry manages to find Jack inside the church. Why Henry decided to walk into that church. That's something I don't understand. But everyone ends up back at the van.
Yeah.
And again, the comedy of trying to get Albert out of the van. There's someone still in the van. We got to get him out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure that tow truck drivers are not allowed to tow a van that have somebody in them.
Yeah.
And that van didn't exactly have tinted windows, so I feel like they would never have towed it.
Yeah. It even had white seats. And as we've already established, Albert was wearing a loud red Hawaiian shirt.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
The red on the white would have probably popped a little bit. Just a little bit.
It reminds me of like King Shark hiding in the van in the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you miss that?
Puts on a mustache. That's how.
finger mustache.
Finger mustache. Yeah.
Yeah. So now they've lost their van. I think, you know, they've tried to, the group has tried to speak to the cops. They've reached out to the police.
Mm-hmm.
So they're only... Their only idea is to start looking for him in the hospital.
And we get the debate about the John Doe's. I remember for myself as a child, yeah, at 12 years old, this was my education on John Doe. It's funny how I've picked up certain pieces of information from pop culture over the years, but this, yeah, is the one that taught me what a John Doe was. Kind of like how The Simpsons taught me how to shave.
Mm.
You know, yeah. There's the scene where, or the episode where Homer thinks he's going to die. This is real early. It's the Fugu Fish one. He thinks he's going to die, so he makes the video for Bart about how to shave. And that was when I finally realized that those are little bits of toilet paper all over your, yes, face when you cut yourself shaving. But yeah, you, yeah. But yeah, John Doe, they start looking for John Does because no one has a Dr. Weitzman anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we're not looking for a John Doe. His name is Dr. Weitzman, yeah. Jeff.
And when they finally do find him, another great line where it's, do you all have to go in? Absolutely. We're the Doe brothers.
Like, yeah.
I thought it was good. Yeah. He's in room 555. Albert manages to communicate that Weitzman is in trouble. So like when they get to room 555, they all run up the stairs to get him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But because of the miscommunication, the cops that are trying to smother Dr. Weitzman, well, the nurse calls security on our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Our squad. Our squad's in trouble. Always with the smothering. Jeez.
Yes. You know, like, yeah. I mean, it's quiet.
I suppose so, yeah.
Could just have done the needle full of air into the blood vessel.
That's true. That would have been a much, much more stereotypical one back then, I feel, yeah, like. Yeah. But they managed to save him just in time. So yeah, they at least know that Dr. Weitzman is still alive for now. But they get out of there pretty goddamn fast and then go to Riley's house, which was another fun scene, just the bit with Ed and, like, coming, waking up to find people in his living room eating, yeah, his breakfast.
I don't know how I would feel about that.
No, probably not.
Especially since they're sought for the murder of a
respected doctor, respected, yeah, psychiatrist, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so they end up, again, you know, Riley can't really harbor these fugitives, so they have to leave, and
yep,
Albert goes back in for his hat because his hat has fallen off, and then he ends up getting nabbed by the cops.
Mm-hmm.
So when Billy goes over and attacks the cops, is he trying to protect Albert, or is he trying to get thrown in with Albert? Like,
I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay. Yeah. I think
he knows, because I think in there, because we obviously see that there is a certain respect,
yeah,
for the police.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just anarchists in the sense where they're just trying to create the trouble. They're not trying to they're not trying to go back to jail.
No. No.
They're not trying to get in trouble, but they are trying to take care of each other. And I think that impulse control and that. I feel like Billy Caulfield, I think his brain works much faster than his body can kind of translate.
Mm.
And I think that his brain is like, okay, my buddy or my guy that I'm supposed to be taking care of is about to go to jail because he got caught by the cops. The only way for me to get into the situation without questioning it, just get the ball rolling and to save him, is to interact with this and get put in jail with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just feel like, you know, does he feel like he needs to be his translator? You know, like, I better stick with this guy because no one else will be able to speak Albert. I mean, Jack, he goes to his old colleague to, you know, try to get a few bucks to get their car out of store or out of, mm-hmm, the tow yard. And he ends up getting arrested. And then Henry goes to see his wife to borrow some money as well.
I think that was the really good scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there was something very powerful. It was a very simple scene, but, mm-hmm, it said so much with so few words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just the gifting of his clipboard,
mm-hmm,
to his daughter was,
oh, that,
yeah,
was a huge deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew, yeah, what a big deal that was. Yeah.
So, and I loved it because it was really, it was true. Like, you know, despite everything and all, like, I mean, I know we'll talk about it at the end, but like the trip definitely achieved its intent, Dr. Weitzman's intent.
Yeah. And then Henry, after seeing his wife, walks to the police station with all the confidence of a doctor and just walks in there saying he wants to talk to his patients. So,
yep.
Yeah, good for him.
I loved his, again, we talk about the acting prowess of Christopher Lloyd, and every scene, like, he straight-faced this entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. It was balls to the wall confidence, and I fucking loved it. I was there for every part of it.
Yeah, he was great. He was absolutely great. But yeah, and then we have the scene where Riley goes to see Billy. I just like the, you know, the first line in that scene is, "Didn't this place used to be blue?" Oh no, that was the other precinct. but I can't imagine. I would not kiss that glass. I would not kiss that glass. Yeah.
Oh my god, I was like,
yeah. COVID has me seeing things even more different than I would have originally.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. 4 years ago, maybe I would have kissed that glass, but now
I
no.
mean, at least he used his shirt and like wiped it off.
Yeah, she used the heel of her hand there. Yeah. You know, she just rubbed it off with her palm.
God.
Yeah. But yeah, he in prison, Billy goes off on everybody and, you know, and goes a little bit nuts, but he has his jail cell epiphany. When he realizes that everybody is making progress,
yeah,
and Weitzman actually kind of knew what he was talking about, so
I like that, and that was you know, that was the first time that we see Albert get up and he whispers in you know Billy's ear and says shithead,
yeah,
you know, and he's like, you're right, I have been a shithead, and I think that was kind of the pivotal moment in all of their relationships, and it shows like. You know, Billy was the linchpin of their little group, their little dynamic group.
And even though it would have been so much easier to have him speak it out loud for everyone to hear, like, I do like the touch that he's come out of his shell, but just enough to whisper in someone's ear, right?
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I do like that. So they are getting sprung from jail because everyone from the Cedar Brook institution is there to pick them up. They end up escaping. They pull the gun and they've got a plan to escape. The four-way missed high five. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Like, you know, you want to keep bringing up the comedy acting prowess of these men, and you know that was just one of those moments where no one hits anyone. Four-way miss. It was perfect. Yeah. But then they go and drop these, switch clothes with everyone and drop them off at a hospital. I love that. You know, yeah, they're going to say they're doctors. They think they're have doctors.
There's that scene, and I know I'm skipping ahead just a little bit, but there's the scene where
they're all medicated?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, where you find out where Dr. Weitzman finally finds out where they've been. Yeah, and we see them watching the news story. Yeah, and they're all heavily medicated.
And yeah, and they're just all like,
they've just accepted it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very, very lethargic. But yeah, so you know, they find out, you know, that Dr. Weitzman is waking up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they gotta get back to the hospital before the cops get back there to finish the job.
Yeah, they've already sent Riley on the mission. She's got a little bit of a head start on them, but they gotta get there to save the bit where she starts flirting with the guy in the hallway to keep the cops from going in. You know, that was a brilliant move. That's some street smarts, Riley. Good job.
I mean, is it?
Well, it...
I mean, we don't... She's not the most...
It did something. It slowed it down.
It worked. I'm just saying it worked a little too well.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I'm saying. But yeah, and then
when they show up to the hospital and they're walking through the hallways of the hospital and Jack reaches over to the guy and says, "Rise and walk, my son." And in the background, as they're walking down the hallway, you see this guy try to get off his stretcher and fall to the ground. Like, just another one of those, just a great sight gag. Just a funny moment.
I wonder if I want to know, like, how much of this was actually, like, potentially improv'd.
Yeah. There could have been some of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the doctor's a firm believer in natural healing. I mean, that could have easily been an improvised line in there. I mean, just the way that Michael Keaton delivers dialogue, like the whole scene that we did, for example, where it's just, you know, he's, I don't know, there, his natural delivery, there's something about it that it feels like half of his shit could be improvised.
Yeah, it's so natural. It's such a natural cadence for him.
Yeah.
I gotta say this. It felt the culmination, I want to say the culmination of the climax, because the climax itself of this movie was not necessarily short. It was kind of not as exciting as I was. I mean, I didn't anticipate it to be a very exciting climax, but at the same time, it was a very short culmination to that climax. That apex curve, the apex portion of the climax was just like, because like it, to me, it starts off at the point where the silly ass scene where the cops are driving to the hospital when they're bringing Dr. Weissman out, okay, and the cops are driving out, and he's basically hanging halfway out the window,
yeah, absolutely,
with a pistol with a silencer on it, and then you got.
Well, see, and the silencer ridiculousness starts in the garage of the police station, where they're obviously not supposed to have this silencer, because he's like, oh, where'd you get this beauty? And it's untraceable. It was from a crime. And he's holding it way up and screwing it on. It's like, maybe you guys should wait till you're just out of the police parking lot before you flash maybe your shit around.
Yeah. Maybe there's no fucking cameras in this police parking lot. I doubt it. But we have, so Albert, he's in the getaway vehicle, which is an ambulance, waiting for them to bring, you know, Dr. Weitzman out and load him in the van so they can make a clean getaway. But he sees the cops before anybody else does, and he just starts flipping switches. And apparently not a single one of these is the actual siren, but it's everything else. Yeah. It's everything else. It's basically the Inspector Gadget of vehicles.
Oh yeah, we've
how
got
much shit is going
yeah wipers off. Going off. I'm surprised there aren't doors opening. And
yeah,
you know,
yeah, like it's
the hood
going,
popping. You know,
yeah, like it's wings are popping out. But finally, he gets the vehicle to start, and he slams into them. And the two cops are trapped in this vehicle, and yet they're still able to get out to end up chasing down all of them.
Well, only the one. They've got the older cop sitting on the ground. Like, he's just he's defeated.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So and like as you already established, the other guy was already halfway out the window. So
true. This is true.
He could have just climbed out the window. His side might have still worked, but no, I guess he sandwiched the car between.
Yeah, they were sandwiched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but his window was open. He probably went out the window. Yeah.
True.
There might have even been a shot of it. I don't know. I don't remember. But yeah, he ends up chasing Riley and Dr. Weitzman. You know, she's pushing Dr. Weitzman in the wheelchair. And
very,
they end up
very handedly, by the way. She is like,
oh, she's motoring down the sidewalk.
Yeah.
She might even be in heels.
Second place at the Indy 500, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah, and so they end up, but they end up trapped, and luckily Billy has shown up to the rescue. Luckily they had the one gun. Albert, you better give me the gun for safekeeping and point it right in his face. Yeah. But yeah, Billy's the hero because he once again leans into the fact that he's an escaped mental patient. That's always his go-to move. Yeah, I'm a maniac.
I'll shoot her.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Kill her. I got other girlfriends.
Yeah. I'm going to count to three. Yeah, I'm not going to count.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, as much as I enjoy the dialogue, I enjoy the scene, but it just felt really, like, underwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, I mean, this isn't, like, a high-stakes action film.
Well,
so
that's true.
I,
like, what were you expecting? You weren't expecting Tom Cruise sprinting down and jumping on a motorcycle and leaping off the side of a mountain. You know, like, that's the big action scene. The chase through the hospital and through the parking lot.
If this were 90s or 2000s, they would have ended up on a roof.
That's true. Yeah.
But because it was 89 and it was still in the 80s, it was in a group of Connexes and in, like, you know, a shipping yard somehow.
Yeah. And then Billy saves the day. Everyone is a hero out of this group, this squad. They're all heroes because they've saved the doctor, they've solved the actual crime, everything has happened, and everybody is now friendly with each other. They're all friends. Yeah. But I have to say that they expedited that pretty quickly, because it seems like they're going home the same afternoon that they sprung him from the hospital.
Right?
There hasn't been any proper paperwork for his discharge from the hospital.
There's been no more tests for this guy who just woke up out of a coma.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but there's going to be some tests to figure out if there's any long-term effects that he's going to suffer from this coma.
Yeah. He gave one report to the police and it was all dealt with at that point. No, this is what happened. Those are the dirty cops. And now everything's okay. Like,
yep.
You'd think there would be a bit of a debrief. You'd think there'd be a bit of a debrief going on.
Yeah.
With this, you know,
they're like, going down to the station. They're being put in interrogation rooms. They're giving statements.
Yeah.
There's paperwork being filed.
Yeah, you're not just writing a statement, handing it to them and saying, peace, I'm out of here, I gotta go back to work.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, I haven't punched out yet. I gotta get
I'm
back
on some
there.
Long overtime, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, all of this has happened. Like, we find out in the news story, we see in that one scene we were talking about with the doped up doctors. But yeah, we see in the news story that just everything is fine. Everything is okay. Yet in that time, they haven't said, and we'll lend you some crutches. Mm-hmm. You know, while we're taking these statements from you, even though this should be a several hour process, we're going to take these statements to you and we're just going to send you off in a van without any way to get out of the van when you get there. Because the guys that that come out of the mental institution to help Dr. Weitzman in, it's just like, you guys can't even bring a wheelchair out with you?
Yeah. It wasn't in the budget, man.
Yeah. No, they just sprung him from... They abducted him. They took him out of the hospital with... Yeah. But they they've still got $42 left, so they've got four in the bleachers and enough for a dog, and enough to bring Dr. Weitzman back a dog. Yeah. I mean, $12 outfits, like 1989.
Yeah.
I want your money back.
Those are Hollywood bucks.
Yeah. But I think there we go. I think that's the dream team.
Yeah.
So now, Aaron, on IMDb, it scored a 6.5 out of 10, has a Metascore of 54, on Rotten Tomatoes, 50% on the tomato meter, and an audience rating of 61%. But Aaron, those are just numbers. Like a Dr. Weitzman getting smoked in the head, hit us with some reviews.
All right. This one is from Hitchcock the Legend. It's an 8 out of 10 score on IMDb, and it's titled, I Drove the Moneylenders from the Temple. I Can Handle a 10 Spot. The Dream Team is directed by Howard Zeif and written by John Connolly. It goes into all that stuff. It's a smart collection of actors playing the afflicted guys. Four actors very comfortable with each other and enjoying the benefits of a strong script. Each one is handed great comedy moments to act out, neither left out and neither disappointing. Boyle arguably steals the film by way of some excellent visual comedy, but it's most likely Keaton's caustic observations and one-line zingers that will leave the lasting impression. The final quarter gets a bit mechanical as the intrepid nut buddies finally bond and the film shifts to a basic chase race against the clock affair. But the gags still come, and you may find you are still laughing about something that was said earlier anyway. Bracco isn't given a lot to do, which practically renders this as being an ultimate buddy-buddy guy flick, and the two dirty coppers, played by James Remar and Philip Bosco, are by-the-numbers villains. Small moans only, though, and in the name of good comedy, who cares, really? It's great to be young and insane. Hell yeah! 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, Peter Boyle, of course, yeah, we did not even focus enough on the fact that he's walking around naked for several moments of this film. Yes. Yeah.
A big old white old man ass.
Yeah, I mean, if walking around with your big old white man, old man ass is something to get you locked up, then lock me up, because who doesn't like to walk around naked a little while, you know?
I do. This is a 10 out of 10 review on IMDb, and it's by Lee Eisenberg, titled Stefan First Needs to Get More Roles. It goes, it's good to know that some movies are just big excuses to be goofy. The Dream Team is one such example. We get introduced to four mental patients. Billy, who is actually close to normal, Henry Sikorsky, believes himself to be a doctor, Jack McDermott, and Albert Inuzzi, barely does anything. When their psychiatrist takes them to New York, he gets attacked by the mafia. which is wrong, and the four patients are left to find themselves. From there, it's basically 2 hours of everyone being as loony as possible. Probably the best scene is the box scene. I nearly died laughing when that scene came up. Anyways, this just goes to show that one can do more for that one can do for comedy. It's not to be missed. Also starring Dennis Boutsakaris and Lorraine Bracco. So really, I was excited about that one, but they didn't even state why Stephen First needs to get more roles.
Yeah,
so
I also want to know, when was that review written? Does it say?
2006.
Okay, well, good, because I would have laughed more if it was 2017, and it's like, well, I can tell you why Stephen First doesn't get more roles. Yeah,
that was actually gonna be my. So, it's, I mean, because everything on his IMDb stops at 2006 anyway, so I mean, okay. That's why I was thinking maybe that's why they said that.
Yeah.
This last one I'm going to read on IMDb, and then I'll move over to Rotten Tomatoes, says, it's an 8 out of 10 also by Flash Callahan. It says, I was with Elvis, and my dog told me to do it. It said, Mike is a tad delusional. Harry believes he's a doctor. Jack is an ad exec who believes Jesus is speaking to him. Albert is an adult who occasionally wets himself. When they are taken to a ball game by Dr. Weitzman, they witness a murder, and Weitzman is attacked and hospitalized. He says, I was 13 the first time I saw this movie, and I instantly fell in love with it. Having not seen in nearly 17 years, I was very worried that one of my favorite movies as a child would not have the same effect now than it did in 92. Although it is dated quite a bit, it's still laugh out loud funny and quite surprisingly touching in places. Understandably, the best parts of the film are when the four are bickering. It's consistently funny and the lines are funny and never fail to raise a smile. Keaton is in full on wacko mode in this and is probably one of his best forgotten roles. Lloyd can play straight and yet be hilarious, but carries the film most humanistic element. If the scene where he visits his wife and daughter doesn't bring a lump in your throat, you need your brain checked. It's very sunshine oriented movie with lots of quotable lines, and if you are feeling down, this is the sort of film you want to watch to brighten your day. It's very easy to watch, goes along quite breezily, and most importantly, never gets boring. Highly recommend. Plus, Keaton has an amazing mullet. I love that one simply because that last line.
Yep. Yeah, it's bouncy. It's impressive. It's
voluminous. Voluminous.
Yeah, it quite is. That one is a review after my own heart. Holy shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Just a couple from Rotten Tomatoes. This one from Renee Jordan is a rotten score, actually, so I didn't want to stay all positive on this one.
Yeah,
but
course.
It says, it's madness is a terrible disorder and not good enough reason to make pathetic jokes. I say okay.
Yeah.
Grant Wilson from The Fiction Machine says, it is a strong example, however, of a good cast salvaging a watchable film out of suspect origins. Mm-hmm. I don't know what these people are talking about.
Yeah.
This one says, I'm going to read a good portion of this one, but this one says that there's little doubt that the Dream Team ultimately fares best in its affable and consistently watchable first half. As filmmakers Zeif working from John Connolly and David Lucas' script does a nice job of establishing the goofy yet likable protagonists and their somewhat irresistible chemistry with one another. With the easygoing vibe heightened by the typically strong efforts of a uniformly talented cast, although Keaton perhaps unsurprisingly remains the picture's obvious MVP, it's only as the movie progresses into its palpably flabby midsection that one's interest begins to flag. Which I don't necessarily agree. I would say that this movie is pretty consistent.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know whether he's highlighted as the MVP. Obviously he's the lead. He's yes. Number one on the call sheet, obviously. He's the one that has the love story. But I don't think he's necessarily the standout character.
Exactly. I think honestly, like, and that's why, you know, that was kind of like the last one I wanted to read, but the reason I say that is because I think that we would both agree, and if it's okay for me to speak on your behalf, I think that we would both agree that this cast carried itself individually and as a team. Like, mm-hmm. There was no real, like, necessarily MVP. They were all very well, like, they all acted their own specific character and issues very well, and then did even better as a team.
Yeah, like, the flabby middle section that it's talking about, that person in that review obviously did not like the branch out storylines, because that flabby middle section is the bit where they go off to do their own things and they're not a team for those parts. So yes. I can understand where you might get that, but I like the branches though. No, I can understand why they say that it was flabby because it's separate stories instead of a unified story. Whereas a Dream Team implies that, you know, just like the basketball legends of the US Olympics, you know, Dream Team implies that you're going to have, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so. Like, you're going to have all these people working together. And if they you get their individual stories, all of a sudden, that's not what I signed up for. I signed up for a team.
That's true. Yeah. I agree. That's true.
But I like the flabby middle section. I like those branches. I like seeing Christopher Lloyd go home and talk
to myself have a flabby middle section.
Yeah.
And I take offense to your review.
That's fat shaming, motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah. Body shaming, motherfucker.
Fat
Fuck
shaming
you.
The dream team. God. Right on. Yeah, the mullet review. That's the one that connects with me the most because that was someone that, like me, watched this when it was probably inappropriately young. I was around 12, 13 when I first found this movie. And it's just stuck with me all these years. And like that person, I agree, some of it doesn't necessarily hold up. But boy, oh boy, you put those four actors together and there is just a magic electricity that is happening that's just, you know, zapping itself straight off the screen that it really works well in some moments. The movie itself is okay. And there are a few problematic elements or just some hurtful language that may not necessarily be, you know, that's the part that doesn't hold up. But overall, I still laugh quite a bit. I had a good time with the Dream Team.
Yeah.
I see those IMDb or the reviews, the Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb, you know, audiences are giving it low 60s. I can see this as a low mid 60 movie. Yeah, that's
That does not mean that it doesn't hold some quality to it still.
That's my view on it. So Aaron, you've now heard of the Dream Team. You've now experienced the Dream Team, and you know that there was a Dream Team before Michael Jordan. So, maybe not. I don't. When was the first Dream Team? Maybe that was at like in 88 Olympics or something. Who knows? But anyway. Yeah. What did you think of the Dream Team?
I liked it. I think it was an enjoyable film. I'm glad I got to experience it. I appreciate you suggesting that one. I think I took more out of enjoying the actors that were in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than really the movie itself.
Well, yeah, you set a high bar by calling yourself the Dream Team, so you better deliver, and it feels like they pretty much did. Yeah.
I don't agree with the person saying that there was like a flabby midsection because I enjoyed the individual stories. I would say for me it was more of like a flabby bottom section and end section.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it.
There might have just been a focus issue. Like maybe the focus was a little meandering at times, you know?
Yeah. But other than that, like, again, I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed getting to see it. I enjoyed experiencing it for the first time. And you know, it's an enjoyable film that I think, you know, people could check out. Again, still not super offensive when it comes to, like, mental health issues because, again, everybody kind of worked through their issues. And if they were to make it end a different way, then I think we would be having a different discussion. But overall, I thought it was a great, it was a fun movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there we go. I think, that's the Dream Team. Yeah, and that's our show for this week. If you like that show, well, just tell people. Share our posts. Go over, follow us on Instagram or X or Blue Sky or Facebook. Yeah, go follow us. Laugh at my memes. Share some posts. Or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on. Give us some stars. If you'd like to request something or, you know, got any suggestions, any feedback for the show, email us at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. Or if you want to be a financial supporter and throw a couple bucks our way, cup of coffee, you know, and, become an executive producer so you can get a shout out on the show. Well, boy, oh boy, go over to patreon.com/iusedtolikethisone and then you get a shout out like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour podcast and Colin. Colin has not been around, but Colin, what are you up to? Tell us now.
All right. If you're in the Edmonton area from April 17th to the 27th, You can find me performing at the Walterdale Theater in the production of The Swearing Jar. I play Owen. It's been a lot of fun picking up some new skills, learning how to play the guitar, so would love it if you came out and watched it. And if you do, I hope you enjoy it. Drop me a line and let me know what you thought.
And of course, a big thank you to our official substitute co-host, Aaron Knowles. Aaron, of course, if the people want to find you doing your other things out there that aren't this, where can they find you?
You can find me doing the Oblivion Bar podcast, basically same as this one. Anywhere you can find your podcast, that's where we are as well. It's the Oblivion Bar. It's myself and my friend Chris, and we just talk about nerd culture. We talk about comics. We talk about newer movies, newer shows. We do a lot of reviews. We do a lot of interviews with comic creators. It's just a good time if you're into current just nerddom,
Nerd stuff.
Nerds.
Yeah, so
feel free to check us out. We got a pretty good website at theobliviabarpodcast.com. We're on all the socials except for X. We quit X because fuck that place. We're on Threads and everything else, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm on Threads too. Yeah, I don't quite get it, but
it's weird.
I post
weird
something
place.
Every once in a while. Yeah, I feel like that's not one I post on daily.
No, for sure not. Yeah. I am personally on Twitter. I like Twitter. If you guys look for me, solely me, you can find me at Better Actions on Twitter, at Better Actions TTV on Instagram. Mostly just, sharing shit from my nonprofit, which is Shred the Stress.
Because of this show and because I have been social media-ing like I've never social media'd before in my life, I have been getting so many more interactions from the people online. I mean, hell, I met you guys just by, or you and anyone else that I've had on this show. I've met them just through social media. But, I've had David Spade like one of my tweets before. I've had... Oh God, I can't even. I've had several names.
Isn't that fun?
It's interesting when someone comments on one of my mask posts. Amy Yazbeck, that's John Ritter's widow. She was in the mask. She was Peggy in the mask. And so I had made a meme about Milo the dog, and she commented on it. I've had
that's awesome.
Someone that was in Roadhouse commented on. What's her name? Something Michaels. Julie Michaels. Julie Michaels has commented on my shit. So I've enjoyed this social media kind of experiment, but it's X that seems to have been giving me the most love back. If anyone celebrity-wise is going to notice one of my posts, it tends to be on X. And that's the only reason I don't want to give it up, because of my little dopamine fix that I get every once in a while when I try to interact with someone.
I don't know if it's Threads or if it was Blue Sky, but it might have been, I don't think it was Instagram. It was on something, but we actually had James Gunn like one of our tweets.
Nice.
Or one of our posts, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I keep throwing some names out there every once in a while to see if shit will stick, but... Like when David Spade liked one of my tweets, I tried to retweet something that said, "Man, it's so cool when someone is awesome as David Spade takes time to like one of your tweets." But that one didn't get a like. Anyway, music by Lyndon, the longest fucking outro ever. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, March Madness month done. Going out with a fizzle. We could have hit it hard with Fight Club to go out on, but no, we went out on the Dream Team. We're going to go out on the episode no one will download. But next week, we are taking the week off because 5 Fridays in March, which means that we plead the fifth. That's what we do over here. We take the 5th Fridays off. So we're now, next time we're on in your ear holes, we'll be in a new theme. So we're going international now.
Oh,
did we have an actual name for it? I don't remember whether we actually came up with a name for our international month.
I think we kind of tossed around like rare imports.
Yeah. Blood diamonds. I know. Nope. Okay. Well, our first one, I'm excited for this one because this is one that I don't know why I saw this. My mom rented it when I was really young, and it's just, it always stuck with me. And so we're going to watch The Gods Must Be Crazy. We're going to go to South Africa first and watch The Gods Must Be Crazy, starring Nzau Toma. Yeah, that's right. I've been practicing that one. Nzau Toma. That's the name of the star. I now know what a palatal click is.
Ah.
Yeah, I know what the symbol for a palatal click is when it comes to African languages. So I learned how to say his name.
Hmm.
Yeah. But no, I used to love The Gods Must Be Crazy. I haven't watched it yet, but I have already written in my notes, Coca-Cola is one of my sponsors. I'm putting money down on the fact that Coca-Cola is a sponsor of this movie. Yeah. So a little peek behind the curtain of
A
little teaser of the next sponsorship corner. Have you seen The Gods Must Be Crazy?
Not in a long time.
Okay, but you have seen it. Okay. Have you seen the sequel?
No. No, that I have not.
Okay. Yeah, see, I barely remember the sequel. It's the first one that sticks with me. Yeah.
I'm excited.
We gotta throw a Coke bottle off the edge of the world because it brought violence to the tribe. It could be wickedly racist though. We're talking early 80s South Africa. Like it.
Oh, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, we could be dealing with a very heavy apartheid lens on this one. Yeah. I can't
wait. Have to do some research.
So there we go. Yeah. Right, yeah. Mandela Effect is named because he did not die in prison, but everyone thinks, right? So we already know that fact to be true. He is alive, or he was alive when this... Yeah, anyway. So there we go. Until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
And I'm Aaron Knowles.
And we'll see you for The Gods Must Be Crazy, I guess in 2 weeks, on I Used to Like This One. Because I did say next week, but I didn't mean next week. Next time.
Next time.
Next time. I just opened a pop here and it exploded on me, so I just need to get some paper towels or something. It's fucking Dr. Pepper. I don't know, I'm a Coke Zero drinker, but Coke Zero goes on sale at one particular store and I buy it in bulk, basically. Mm. But they were sold out today, so I'm like, ugh, okay, I'll look later. I don't want to stop at another one, and I'll just buy Dr. Pepper. But it always fucking explodes on me. And it wasn't even somewhere where it was shaken.
It's what the doctor ordered.
It sure is, yeah. A pain in the ass.